Cool, let's get underway. All right, Carl. Mm-hmm. Welcome back to the Carly Pilk Boys podcast, series two. We are two little radio fellas having a chat about the old Ricky Gervais show on XFM, obviously. I'm David Ferrier.
With Stephen Merchant.
I've been a mad fan of these shows for years. This is Zach's first time today. Series 2, Episode 1, a.k.a. Man Moth. Zach, it has been a minute. How are you? How was your Christmas and New Year's?
It was great, thank you, Dave. We've been separated by the whole continent of Australia. Dave and I, well, it's a couple of months now. We haven't seen each other. We've been... We're the sandwich, we're the bread on the Australian sandwich, whereas we're both on both coasts at the moment, and the whole of Australia is between us.
We are time zones apart. I've been in Perth since October, so I ended series one over here because my mum's really sick, and then also it doesn't help that borders are shut, so I haven't even been able to duck back to Brisbane at all. So I've been paying rent, Zach, this whole time for my apartment over there. Oh, it's brutal. It's brutal. But hopefully, well, just at the time we're recording this, it does look like things are going to slowly get back to normal. Novak Djokovic has just been kicked out of the country. Australia's just won the Ashes 4-0. And it looks like 2022 might slowly edge towards normal, although I hesitate to say that because I feel like I might jinx us all.
No, no, I mean, I don't really want to talk about COVID because I feel like that... have you had the experience of every single Zoom chat I've had in the last 2 years, you do 10 minutes of COVID chat at the start of like lockdowns and how are you going and stuff like that? Like regardless, I've had it in work context, I've had it in personal context, I've had it in multiple work contexts, so like on different organizations, and I feel like these could be, I'm like, when people listen back to this in a couple of years, I mean, it's pretty arrogant to think that someone's going to listen to this in a couple of years. If someone happens to listen to this in a couple of years, you know, I don't want to give COVID the time and space.
Yeah,
to take this, up our sacred podcast spot.
This is meant to be an evergreen podcast, so let's not date it too much. But I think it's important to give that context to justify how shoddy this is going to be, because we are talking over Zoom right now. We are recording separately. We have done a trial recording of something else that was an absolute disaster. It will never see the light of day. So, look, if that explains why this is such a shambles, that might explain why this finished product ends up such a shambles. It has nothing to do with the fact that we're shit at this. It is COVID's fault.
That's actually a good point. I mean, we should bring up COVID more so that we have something to blame.
Yeah, and use it for excuses in all walks of life. I know I am. Yeah. Hey, Zach, you've got a new radio show. That's an exciting thing for the start of this year that I just want to let everyone know about. Because, Zach, we haven't really said this on the show. You've been out of radio for like a year, 2 years?
2 years, COVID.
But you're back.
The whole of COVID.
It's all COVID's fault.
Yeah, back. And funnily enough, in the context of talking about Ricky Gervais show, doing basically the same slot that these guys are doing, like a Saturday afternoon show.
So you're back with Dom. It's Collective Noun. If you're in Australia, it's on the ARN network, so like KISS and stuff. And then you guys are doing a podcast of the show as well. How was it like getting back on the horse?
I have listened to that if you're that way inclined. It was a little bit actually. It's like difficult when you go into a new building, you start a new job. When you start any new job, the kind of onboarding process is always more thorough than I'm anticipating. And, you know, so it's like getting new computers, getting new programs, logging into your emails. It's a lot. And so, you know, the radio equivalent of that is like new studios, new desks. And so I thought that I was like, this might not go to air. I was at one stage. I was like, man, there's a lot that we got to get our heads around. But, yeah.
Do you guys have a Carl? Is someone running the desk? Because you and Dom don't...
No, just ask. We've historically done that. There was a brief period when we didn't, but...
Oh, Dom's behind the desk usually, isn't he?
We've done it ourselves.
And then you have a little controller on your side to fire off your own grabs and stuff that you want to keep from him.
Yeah, but we're just running pretty basic at the moment.
Any,
you know, for those reasons. Like, I've got to get my head around the studios and stuff like that.
Any talk about little hairy fellas that grew up with wolves? Or...
Let me have a thing.
Man moths. Cats that didn't look happy.
Not this time.
Well, it was your first show. There's still plenty of opportunities to come. A little bit more business before we get into the Air Checker Series 2, Episode 1. If you are listening to this on our brand new Patreon, thank you very much. The Carly Pilk Boys. We're monetizing. Takes. Or if you're listening to this in the free feed a week later, well, I can tell you, for just $2 a month, you can get the show a week early and ad-free. Just $2 a month. That seems pretty reasonable. Don't you reckon, Zach? Please validate my choices for me.
Very cheap.
Well, you described it as... Can you just share how you described the cost of $2 a month for something like this?
I feel like it's one of those bank transactions that you see in your statement a few months later and you never even noticed it. You know, there's like some type of fee that you had to pay and you're like, what the hell was that? Oh, well, never noticed it. Didn't impact me. That's what this podcast can be. It can be a slight little annoyance that you realize a few months later came out of your bank account and you got a podcast a week early.
A random charge on your bank statement. That's what this Patreon can be. And that's $2 Australian, by the way. So I know most of our listeners are in the UK. So the pound is pretty strong against the dollar. So I think it works out to be like £1 or something like that. So if you want to support the show, as I mentioned, you can get it absolutely free. It just will come out a week later. If you want to support the show, jump on the Patreon, Carly Pilk Boys. It will pay for Jaffa Cakes. It will pay for our penguins, our burgers and grapes, our Lindauer sparkling wine, and anything that's left over will go into a little coin jar that I've got with the sign label written RSK Convention in Manchester in September. Look, we can dream. We can dream that we might be there, and you could help.
So, what is this? I saw you sharing about this on the new Carly Pilk Boys Instagram. There's some type of convention for. Is it Ricky Gervais fans or is it specific fans
it's
of this
specific
show?
Fans of Ricky, Steve, and Carl. I've seen that they're already going to have a live podcast from the Wernham Pod. I think it's called the podcast about The Office. It's all the artwork is all the from the like animation, the Ricky, Steve, and Carl animation. So I feel like the Carly Pilk Boys would fit right in.
And what's the scale of this? Like, how many people are we talking? Is it like going to be in a pub for one night? Is it in a convention room?
What do I look like? The organizer? You
know, like what? Like,
no, it's probably going to be in the O2 Arena. They'll probably have to relocate.
That's what I mean. I'm like, how many fans are there?
There's several there? Hundred. Hundreds. It's in the hundreds.
Yeah.
We'll see. That's something. That's a big dream to work towards. So get around the Patreon. There is just the one level at the moment. $2 a month, you get the show a week early and ad free. And we will be introducing other tiers soon. But you know, one thing at a time. And the other thing is, we do have merch now. There is a Carly Pilk Boys design on Teespring. I've done a little horse in the house drawing. It's very simple. I kind of thought, look, what would I want to wear as a fan? And I thought, just a reference. No words, nothing overly obvious. The type of thing that you wear, and then if someone on the street randomly identifies it and goes, horse in the house, you know you found a friend. So you can check that out. The link to that, you can get it on all sorts of things. You can get like iPhone cases or water bottles with this little simple horse in the house design. Beach towels, you can even get it's pretty amazing. The link to that is in the bio of our Instagram, carly.pilkboys on Instagram. Also, don't forget you can email the show, carlypilkboyspod@gmail.com. We are back for series two. There are 51 episodes we need to get through, minus a couple of best of shows. So we may as well get started right now with the air check. Series 2, Episode 1, a.k.a. Man Moth, broadcast the 24th of August, 2002. Zach, your overall thoughts?
Possibly the greatest episode yet. I'm putting it out there.
That's a big call. We've had Horse in the House.
It was... that's true. But see, these had great moments. Carl in this is on fire. He has, like, a number of iconic moments. Obviously, the great... Man Moth moment, which
we'll come to.
Struck me, you know, we've been listening to this on the YouTube channel, well, until recently, until we found out that these episodes were on Spotify, but I had been listening on the podcast channel Man Moth, and for the whole time I was just like, oh, that's a weird name. I'm like, what does Man Moth mean? But you know, people have weird YouTube names. I was like, oh, they've obviously just made up a weird thing. And then it was like everything washing over me, coming together, clicking together as Carl says Man Moth. I'm like, ah.
You texted me out of the blue just saying, funniest moment yet, actually laughed out loud at that. I should have asked you to just record your reaction. But you talk about like, oh, yes. Realizing that things yes. are references. We did talk earlier on because I posted a couple of times over Christmas on our Instagram, carly.pilkboys. And we caught up, and you said like, hey, I've been seeing what you've been posting on the Instagram, and I trust that they're funny. I don't know. There was some Christmas rock busters.
I just had no idea.
But look,
I had no idea what it was about. I was like gibberish. It was like looking at memes in another language, and I'm like, I trust that Dave knows what he's doing. I trust that these make sense, but I'm like, I don't know. What does that mean?
Because if this is your first show, you've never listened before. Zach has never heard these shows before. I'm an insane fan. This is Zach's first time, so he's experiencing them in real time. It's a treat. My overall thoughts were Carl's role in this show grows over time the same way his career grew through his association with Ricky.
Very well done. I did have a little ditty prepared, but it was... a reference to Man Moth, but it didn't work because we had referenced Man Moth so many times. Just before anyone comes at me for not doing my homework, like if they're like, "Oh, Zach didn't do his ditty." No,
I had an established moment in this show now. Yeah,
so I'm going to prove it. I was going to say something like, "It was already a mammoth show, but then halfway through it became a Man Moth show." But see, that doesn't work if we had said Man Moth 100 times already. We had already called it Man Moth. We had already made references to the idea that it was on the YouTube channel Man Moth. So I'm like, I'm just going to have to... I felt like, were you ever at school and someone did... you're doing orals, right? Like an oral presentation. And a kid gets up in front of you and like does your topic and is using all your facts. And then you're sitting down there and you're like crapping your pants because you're like, oh no, I've got nothing and I'm up next. That's how I felt.
Like a stand-up who the comic right before them goes up and does all their material. You just get up and do crowd work. I expect that's what you did in primary school. You just got up and did crowd work instead. Is anyone
hey,
here
where are you
from Brisbane Primary School? What do you do for a job? I'm 8.
That'd be great, a primary school stand-up. just doing bits about the tuck shop.
So the last Ricky Steve and Carl show was May 14. This is August 24. They've had 16 weeks off, 16 weeks to go and make the Office Series 2. 16 weeks, just for anyone who might find this interesting, that's about as much time as the typical breakfast radio host gets off each year in Australia. They get more holidays than any other industry. If you like not working, become a breakfast radio host in Australia.
Yeah, the holidays are extremely good. It's kind of, you know, if you're on the other end, if you're starting out, I guess it's like anything. You have to be the one to fill in in those holidays. That's where you get a lot of your opportunities, like summer fill-ins and stuff. So I have noticed a lot of young announcers over this Christmas break being like, oh man, you're working a lot. But I guess that's the opposite ends of the spectrum. But isn't it interesting how many... if these guys made the second series of The Office in that break, it kind of stands to reason that you could possibly, if you're a breakfast radio announcer here, make a TV show in your holidays.
Easy. Over the summer holidays, it's a little more complicated because Christmas and New Year's happens during our summer holidays. Southern Hemisphere, etc., etc. But yeah, it's you could really get some stuff done. I got a friend who's on a breakfast show in Melbourne, and he got COVID. And I texted him to see if he was okay. He said, "Yeah, man, I'm fine. I'm just annoyed that this is happening during my holidays." And I had to bite my tongue and not to go, "Well, at least you've got the other 9 weeks to make up for it."
But it's also great because it's already a great job. Like it.
The conditions are already amazing. You just have to get up.
Generally, really fun. Yeah, the only issue is it can be stressful if you're not raiding and you have to get up early, so the sleep thing's an issue. But yeah, I mean, like, there's other jobs that get, like, you know, there's like FIFO work in Australia, fly in, fly out. I'm not sure if that's something that the UK would be familiar with, but with all the mines, because they're in like such remote areas, usually young people, but could be anyone. They fly in, they work for 2 weeks. And it used to be you fly out and you get 2 weeks off. I think the conditions are a bit harsher now.
It depends on the job you have. There's all sorts of time on, time off.
Well, you're in Perth at the moment, which is like there's a lot of FIFO workers over there. And so like, but, so you get a lot of time off, but you're doing hard work. Like, it's like hard stuff. You're driving big trucks and, you know, digging and mining. Like, probably the hardest work. And so, yeah, radio is like you sit in an air-conditioned room talking into a microphone and you get 16 weeks off. Pretty good.
Yeah, well, not quite 16 weeks, but yeah, it can be... It's existentially hard work. It's like mentally hard work, I would say. It is like fatiguing because of all those reasons you said about ratings and having to like deliver your personality, like just the days where you just want to do anything else but talk into a microphone, you have to switch it on. So
yeah, there's obviously
just,
there are
just
challenges.
To put the shoe on the other foot for a moment, it is lots of fun, and you own, like, you know, you're only on the show is 3 hours. An hour and a half of that is taken up by music, another 45 minutes taken up by ads, and you know, so like you end up talking for an hour out of those three. But, yeah, it does. It's not without its, like, oh, the things that make you at the end of the week or the end of the survey period go, you know, I would really love a sit down. I'd really love to not have my alarm go off at 3:30 in the morning.
100%. I agree with you. It has its challenges. I'm just saying compared to...
to people shoveling dirt.
Or like when they... I've read a few articles before of people who talk about... have publicly spoken about the challenges of radio, about how hard it is. And I'm just like, oh, a lot of people reading this have proper hard jobs. I'm like, I probably...
You get to go to events with open bars and, you know, like movie screenings, and you get to laugh. Like,
yeah, regularly. I would... we can talk
about this
internally.
If you're in a good breakfast radio... Yeah. If you're in a good breakfast radio situation where everyone gets along, because that's the other thing, if it's like a toxic atmosphere in the relationship, because it's so essential to have that chemistry in relationship, if that is not there, it can be very hard and very like yuck to be a part of. But if you're in a good situation, oh man, what a privilege.
You know who I never hear complain? I never hear talk about the downsides of the job or the stress. Astronauts. Don't you think? Like, I've never heard one of them come back and go, yeah, the view was pretty good, but man, it stunk in that space shit. I had to sit there for like a whole week just in this tiny little room.
I think it's probably a prerequisite. You have to be happy-go-lucky to be an astronaut.
Do you think they all seem to have pretty good attitudes? You know when you see them interviewed and stuff? Like, none of them ever seem to be like, oh, I couldn't wait to get home.
Rubbing their eyes, like, walking down that gangplank to like, load in to go to the space station, like, rubbing their eyes, like, okay, I just got to get through this, and then I've got 2 weeks in Bali.
I would love, you know, Carl's attitude in Idiot Abroad, where he's kind of looking at these, like, amazing monuments, and he's like, eh, you know, he's looking at the pyramids of Giza and stuff like that, and he's like, oh yeah, whatever. I'd love it, him in a spacesuit doing like a spacewalk, looking at like like the curvature of the Earth and just being like, it's not that big.
It's not as good as a packet of Jaffa Cakes. So this show was just a just over a month until Series 2 of The Office premiered on the 30th of September on BBC Two. So that's another fun little storyline that's happening. As we've talked about on this show, one of the things I love is that it is capturing Steve and Ricky particularly at this like very important time in their career. So they're going off and making this iconic TV show, and then on Saturdays coming and talking absolute nonsense with Carl Pilkington. So let's get to the air check. We're only 20 minutes into the podcast. That's pretty good to finally get to it. Break one, they do a very quick intro. Carl's entire contribution is he just says, and that's it. Quick hellos, and they move on into a song. In break two is when they talk about people showing off their stereo systems, pointing out that guy. The guy's like, oh, he must have been 24, already losing his hair, cranking Dire Straits, money for nothing. Steve has a go at Ricky for what he's eating, the croque monsieur. And I love a break, Zach, that ends with this.
It's the thing with like, what? This is rubbish. Play Coldplay.
Just to pull the ripcord, this is going nowhere. I've just realised we are talking absolute nonsense.
They do that. That's a really obvious example of it, but quite often they just yell, play the song. But it's funny because like sometimes in those environments, like when you have someone like Carl pushing the buttons for you, you have to, it's a non-verbal cue. You kind of shoot them a look or something like, that's it. That's the out. Play the song. And that's a part of like the chemistry.
Point. I love the big point.
Yeah, point at them or something. That's a part of the chemistry is everyone getting used to each other's rhythms. But I love in this, they're just not doing any of that. They often just yell, play the song.
Get out. Break three is when we hear about Steve's Edinburgh ordeal, which he's been keeping secret this whole time. He missed his plane and had to pay £165 to upgrade to a new flight because he was late, because they dropped Ricky off at the train station first. Now, Zach, you heard this for the first time. Whose side are you on? Yeah.
Okay. 100% Ricky's. And I think it comes up a couple of times in this episode. In my opinion, I know that it's a joke, but I also think it's real. Steve's cheapness. But he, on a number of occasions, this is a good example. He includes details in a story that are unnecessary and highlight the cheapness. And in this one, it was pointing out that the company had paid for him to fly. Like, he goes, and they put me up in a hotel. Who cares? Like, why is that an important detail? But I think he's quite proud of it. I think he's quite... Yeah. He's one of the great perks is he no longer has to pay to stay in hotels.
It's a humble brag slipped in there.
But it's like Steve's as if it's very totally new cheap and exciting to him, and he's always... Yeah, does he admit to being cheap or does he defend himself? Because this one's not a great episode for his cheapness.
He constantly defends himself and says, I'm not cheap. I am careful with money. I want value for money. Take care of the pennies, the pounds will... I mean, sorry, if you... what is it? There's a saying he says, if you look after the pennies, the pounds will take care of themselves or something like that.
But at the same time in this story, I felt like that there were other details that were revealed. Again, not the main part of the story, but just something that slips out that I thought, man, Ricky could be a difficult person to be friends with because he would talk about how they would be going to the same meeting and Steve would get there and Ricky had organized a car to go with to pick Ricky up. And Steve would go, you know, be panting, basically. He's like, I've taken two trains and a bus. Why couldn't you pick me up in the car? And Ricky goes, every man for himself. If you wanted it, you should have organized it. And I'm like, there's not much teamwork going on here.
Also, like, before, I get it now that he's super wealthy, but, like, before that, because Ricky says he never, ever took the tube. He used to run everywhere. But, like, organizing private cars all over the place. They might live in different... I think they do live in different parts of London as well, which would be an obstacle.
Right. But, so what does he mean when he says... when he says organized a car, is he talking about like a private car service, or is that just how he says get a cab?
Good point. I don't know. I don't know.
Don't you think there's different levels of like eliteness there, isn't there? Like if you say I organize a car, you sound like a high roller, but if you say I took a cab, it's like, oh, okay.
That's so true. I assumed it was a private driver like a town car, but if I book an UberX, I can say I've organized a car. Yeah, I've organized a driver. A driver's coming to pick me up. They do a very minor solicit for opinions here. I don't know if you caught it, but they move straight past it. They ask people to like, whose side are you on to call in? Which is, I thought, if this were a regular radio show, that's what they would have done. They maybe even would have got an opener made up. Steve versus Ricky, whose side are you on? And then they would have taken calls. And then it would have been like, well, 65% of our callers side with you, Steve. Ricky should chip in £50. That's the radio, the real radio version of this break.
Yeah, flash poll or instant poll or do something like that.
You can also vote on our Instagram.
Yeah, that's a good one. Instagram's kind of killed that because Instagram has their little poll there that gives you a percentage. You don't have to figure it out. So you just pop that up. You pop that up 10 minutes before the show. That gives you something to add in the a little thing to go out on. Done that 1,000 times.
Oh, I've made up figures 1,000 times. It looks like 80% of people say yes. So break four, they're still going on about Steve's Edinburgh ordeal. Ricky points out that Steve was gloating before missing the plane about how early he was going to get back. Quick opinion, of those two modes of transport, I found myself thinking like, yeah, it would be much nicer to relax on a train with plenty of space.
One of the things I envy about Europe the most is how you could travel around by train.
Here, I'm so with you. I'm so with you.
Australia is so big. So big. And the towns, not the towns, the cities are so far away from each other. Like where I am in Brisbane, I'm 1,000 kilometers either way from a major city. And so we're in a major city. I guess like an hour each way, there's kind of like pretty big cities. But like Cairns,
you've got Byron
way
Bay,
up the
you've
top.
Got the Hemsworths.
Yeah, they're not the anti-vaxxers. You know, they're beach towns. And so, what is it, like 1,000 kilometres to Cairns and then like roughly 1,000 kilometres to Sydney?
It's more than that.
Long way away. Is it? Is it?
Going to Cairns is the same way as going to Melbourne the other way.
Right. And so there's
It takes like 2 days to drive.
And a train would take, you know, I don't know how long that would be. And also, it's like, they just don't even bother with trains because they're like, that's too far to put tracks.
Like, too hard. Like,
they're just like, and so when I was in Europe and you could catch trains, I was like, this is amazing because I hate flying. I hate flying. I love the idea of being in a train. You get to look out the window, have some food and drink. Like, that would be the, I almost, listening to this, went to my wife and said, we need to go back to Europe and we need to book some train trips. Because of the way that, even though that Ricky describes it as kicking back with these Sony Discman, a very outdated reference, I was still like, that sounds nice.
Yeah, having a drink, there's proper leg room. Yeah, there's just not the same culture of train travel, unless you want to take the Garn and go from Adelaide straight up through the middle of Australia, which does seem like an amazing experience.
Have a look at this. Have a look at this. Can you see over my shoulder? You probably can't see because it's all... See, I've got a train postcard from a train trip I took in Japan. But when I was in Japan, I was on a train and I said to my wife, I'm like, at 30 years old, I was like, I think I might be a train guy. I'm like, it was like a real awakening for me. I was like, I think I might
You're
be
coming out
trains.
Of the carriage. What do you, are you model train curious?
No, I mean, I'm on the gateway to that, aren't I? I'm on that seems like the track that I'm on at the moment. I'm just interested in taking train trips, and it's also severely probably exaggerated by the fact that I don't like flying.
Mm. Okay. So you're not quite standing on little hills watching trains come in and go, that's no, the Pacific Blue. Yeah.
When I was in...
not yet. We'll get there.
I took a train from, you know, Paris to Germany, somewhere southern Germany, and it was going through all these fields. You know those high-speed French trains where, like, flying through these fields? And there's these people on ladders in the fields, right? I ducked when I first saw one because I thought he had a gun and he was pointing it at the train. But it was a... But then I kind of looked back and I was like, I think they're taking photos of the train. It was like a huge... It was like a huge, like, long lens.
Telephoto lens?
Yeah. And I was like, oh, I'd never... Before that, you know, this is like 5 years ago, I'd never... Because Australia is not a big train culture as far as I'm aware. And so, like, train spotting isn't really a thing. And I was like, oh, hang on. Because then I started to see groups of people in fields further on. And I'm like, I think they're getting together to look at the train. It was like totally foreign to me.
Yeah. Start waving out the window.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
I didn't know, I might have been on a special train. We just booked a, you know, you just book a high-speed train. I don't know. Maybe it was like a special one that people were excited to see. No idea.
Yeah, both on Ricky's side there, taking the train, take the longer way. More relaxing. I found... So, they then talk more about Steve being cheap. And I found this relatable. The thing that Steve says about buying drinks for people you don't know.
And you know that thing where you're buying a round of drinks for people you don't even know? So, it's like, what's the story there? Why am I suddenly bankrolling you drinks? It's like, I don't know you people. I'm not going to get any kind of... I'm not going to see you again to sort of reap the benefits at a later point.
Because he came in
Most of you are married or engaged, so I'm not even going to pull from it. It was a waste of time. It was pure generosity.
Because, you know, like when you go to a birthday drinks and you know who's the person whose birthday it is, but you don't necessarily know the other six people at the table. And so there's that moment where you get up to get yourself a drink, but then you feel the social contract kick in of, well, I need to ask if anyone needs a drink. And then unless you end up doing eight rounds, you're going to end up out of pocket.
Yeah, but are you of the belief that it evens out over time? Like, the amount of times that you do it, you probably have someone else do it for you.
That's a glass half full approach. No, I don't. I think only of that. But then, you know what? You've pointed out that the times where I've been the beneficiary of it, I haven't thought twice about it. I've just been like, oh, this is a nice little bonus this person offered. So I'm going to say yes. Look, that's a real karma-centric big-picture view. And I'm just not that kind of guy.
I wish that we just had clearer societal expectations. Like, that we basically that everyone just buys their own drinks. Because, like, just even not even drinks, but, like, splitting a bill, you know, when you have dinner together.
Oh, man, going out...
It's so awkward.
Yeah. Going out to dinner with friends and, like, oh, should we just get a bunch of plates and, like, we'll all share... It's like 50-50, 50% of the time I'm like, okay, sure. But the other time I'm like, can't I just order what I want and we just enjoy what we all want instead of getting like a small portion of what we actually want and then trying a bunch of shit that I don't want?
Well, you know what? I think in this show there's a difference in personalities because I think Steve goes along with it and complains about it later. You know, that he goes along with it because he thinks that's what he needs to do. And then he says later, you know, I bought drinks for everyone. Don't know who those people are. But I think that would never happen to Ricky because I think he'd just say, I'm eating my meal. You guys don't care what you do. Like, yeah, I'm ordering my own thing.
Yeah. You can all have your tapas. what I want. Break five, we get the first proper appearance from Carl. He's just come back from Edinburgh. He talks about the people on the plane fighting over the seat, another reason why he should pick trains over planes. It quickly gets back to Steve being cheap, though. Third break in a row, dwelling on the same topic. And we do get another glimpse of Steve's character from Hello Ladies, the show, which you haven't watched yet, Zach, but the ongoing sort of painting the picture, the heightened version of the real Steve, I imagine, which is his irritation over women allowing Steve to buy them drinks only to then tell him that they have a boyfriend. Stop wasting my time, he says. And then Ricky tells us one of the great moral conundrums of our time that Steve faced.
He once, right, he said to me, he came in to work and he said, I gave a homeless girl a pound, right, because I fancied her. He said, is that wrong? Is that really bad of
me? I don't think it is, you see. I don't think it is, because it seems to me if she was an attractive homeless girl, then she deserves some of my money.
I just imagine him slowing down. I imagine him, like, going past loads of tramps, going, get out of it, get a job. And she goes, hello.
Zach, is that wrong?
Yes.
Break six. Back to Carl. He became mates with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost at Edinburgh, and Ricky is jealous, which annoys Carl. And we get the first bit of bizarre nonsense from Carl, about the story of the doctor getting his head chopped off to and saying count how many times I blink.
How about the way Carl talks about Nick? The way that they talk about the conversations they had together. So they talk about how Ricky, Nick, Simon and Carl went out together, and Carl was saying, like, hey, Nick, tell that story. And I was like, wow, these guys are all at this stage. So Ricky's just done The Office. Nick and Simon have just done Spaced, I think, and they're about to do
gearing up for Shaun of the Dead.
And I was like, and then you got Carl. I'm like, he is in the center of kind of like this new wave of English comedic talent. And it sounded like he was having a great time. Like, he's out having drinks with them, sharing stories. And it was a rare time because, you know, he went to that awards night and said it was the worst night of his life. But this sounds like that he's having a genuinely great time.
Yeah, it's there's at some point, I wrote it down a bit later, where Steve points out, he goes, this is the first time that you've enjoyed something that I've, since I've known you, that something like that you've done now that you've truly enjoyed. But that's so true, that he's like with Ricky and Steve when they're making The Office, he's with Nick and Simon as they've just finished Space and about to make one of the best comedy horror movies ever. And not only that, he's being embraced by them. They love him. They absolutely love him.
Yes. I think also with Edinburgh, he's doing OBs, like outside broadcasts. Like, you know, he's broadcasting from somewhere not in the studio. And that's always exciting. It doesn't matter. In Australia, we do a lot. Well, in regional centres, there's kind of like a trope that you have to do them from Harvey Norman car parks, which is an electronics store, like every Saturday morning. I mean, that's the low end. But even that is exciting. But, you know, if you're broadcasting from a hotel room where you're interviewing a superstar, if you're on a trip overseas, it's just a vibe. And so he's got that. He loves radio. We know that. So, like, we know that would be a kick for him. Then he's with all these comics and they're, you know, having a great time. Then he's in a different country. You can just imagine. It would be a good time.
That's my dream, to talk to Carl, to interview him and to talk to him about radio, because I don't think anyone's really done that. Because he, when I talked to Andrew Phillips, he was like, yeah, me and Carl early on, we were going around and like working on stations as a whole. So he would know all about the technical side and how the operations of a radio station. I'd love to ask him about that, particularly because technology has come so far, the type of things that he was dealing with. And you know, I suspect that he might be, you know, it was a big part of his life. That's my, if I ever get the opportunity, that will be my pitch. Instead of just asking, like, oh, what was it like getting your head squoze every day? That's I'll keep dreaming. We did also, just a quick mention, you and I listened to the first two episodes of those Simon Pegg, Nick Frost shows. We were thinking of doing them as a spin-off, but hard to find good quality copies. The one that we listened to was just too, it was too low quality to even get through. But I listened to them years ago, and I'm sure I've still got them as MP3s on an old laptop somewhere. But you'd never heard those either. But we got a general idea, you did, of what those shows were like. And I think you hit the nail on the head when we were talking about it, which was that, like, Simon and Nick are much more going for the joke when they're dealing with Carl, whereas Ricky and Steve are listening and reacting to what Carl says. And sometimes what's so funny is that the reaction is not a joke. It is shock and outrage and disbelief at the nonsense that's coming out of his mouth, whereas Simon and Nick would go to, like, one up or yes and the joke or kind of get on the same level as Carl when he was telling a ghost story or something and go like, oh, well, yeah, actually my nan also saw a ghost too, you know, with a funny hat.
You know what it could be as well? I'm just thinking on top of my head because I remember with those Simon and Nick episodes too, they're like, they do a lot more kind of performing, I would say. So they do things like they've got to, they'd say, oh, no, it'd be like, it's Simon here and I've got Nick over there. Nick, you come over to the microphone. He'll be off mark yelling like, I can't. I'm trying to keep this dolphin alive.
Yeah.
Oh, where did you get a dolphin from? I just stole it from the aquarium. Well, quick, I'll help you get a hose. They're kind of doing these bits like that. And I wonder if it's because, I wonder if the difference is they're more performers and Ricky and Steve are more writers. You know, they're very much so like they sit in the one spot. They're very curious people. Their energy stays at a similar level. And, you know, there's a lot of crossover between like writers and performers. Obviously, Nick and Simon are both. But I'm like, I wonder if they're, if particularly like Nick, just very much more like a, like you give him a little bit of an opener and he's like, boom, gonna fill the space with all this energy. Whereas like Ricky and Steve definitely aren't that. Their energy's, you know, even Ricky's energy, like he can get quite, you know, animated, but like he won't fill the space by default. Like they kind of have to be invited to fill the space. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas like those big energies like Nick, they'll just, they just permeate everywhere.
I suspect it's just that Nick and Simon tried harder and they wanted to do better. Because you're right, there were way more bits. There was way more intentional comedy. There was way more whimsy. Whereas, because Ricky's a performer, he's stand-up and acting and everything. Stephen Merchant just played a serial killer on a TV show. So, like, I just think they don't care as much. They've got bigger fish to fry. This is just, like, them mucking
around.
No, they're both
performers and writers. I just mean more their spirit.
Oh, okay. Know,
what are they at rest? What's their resting position? In a position of rest, do they default more to one or the other? And I think Ricky and Steve, for example, when they were doing bits on this show, they were still very low energy. It was still like, you know, when you'd do those film reviews, they were just like anti-reviews. Like it was like very slow and like the energy, it was like, oh, okay. Like that was kind of the gag. Like the gag was more the whole bit as a concept rather than actual bam, 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 bam jokes. I don't know. But I'm just thinking, like, the energies are totally different, and it's interesting to see Carl in both situations, because he kind of, in the Nick and Simon one, it's more of a, he's, like, the boss. Like, he kind of gets stuck into him, and he's like, what station are we on?
Yeah.
Who are you? Like, he's telling them that they have to reset and stuff like that. He would never do that to Ricky, because he'd know that Ricky would bite back real hard.
We should maybe at one point, it might be interesting for you to listen to the series zero of the Ricky show before they had Carl. So this is before The Office, because there was more, like there were sketches and stuff. They had this sketch about the counseling line because the Spice Girls broke up. And it's like a sketch of you hear what the call is like and stuff. Early on it was definitely more attempts. And the thing that I love about those shows is Ricky gets his mum on the phone before she passed away, and you hear what she sounds like, and you hear, I think, you get an idea of where he gets his sense of humour from, because there is just, or at least his cheekiness, because of the way she reacts to him. It's pretty good. It's one of the good things. But again, low quality audio, unfortunately. So we're back still on break six, Carl's second ghost story, which is the one about the baby who's controlling the furniture. And this is when, for me, the show gets back to its absolute best, which is Carl telling a nonsense story and Ricky and Steve, with their quick wit, they're riffing and reacting to the details. And it's magic.
Carl's timing, there's a couple of quotes in this episode where his timing is just impeccable. And I think there's one in here.
Yeah, let's get to it. So when the break seven, they're summarizing it and trying to get to understand what Carl found interesting about that story. And he tells them this.
Carl, seriously, why did you tell me that story? What did you think it was weird about that?
The fact that it was three different people.
Is this all the information? Is that the entire story?
Three different people.
Did you fall asleep and not read the end?
A fire that didn't happen, about a wife that didn't exist, and a cat that didn't look happy.
The choice of words.
It's so
the
good.
Timing. It's just so naturally so hilarious.
And like, this is the funny thing where it goes, like, yes, he's an oddball character, but like, there's a fundamental rule in comedy, like the rule of threes, where it's like straight joke. Like the first two things he lists are like, well, you know, are really straight, and then the last one's hilarious. And so it's like he just has this natural, I don't know if it's just like a natural inbuilt timing or how much of it's intentional, but what is it? A cat that didn't look happy.
I think it's natural because there's time where it can't be planned. Like early on in series one, where he's doing that quiz and he's getting everything wrong, and he just has that delivery of, all right, okay, Carl, come on, next question, get it right. And he goes, all right, where, what? And it's the timing is what makes it so funny. And you can't plan that.
And the idea here that the cat could see, because it he thinks it's inherent, because he's like, the cat's not happy, that's suspect. But because he's working on assumed knowledge that everyone knows that cats can see spirits. it's like, you know, so he's like so many layers down in this, because they're like, no, you know when you're arguing with someone, but it's like the other team don't even agree with the premise. That's kind of the situation here, where it's like, no, but we don't agree that cats can see spirits, so like that's not a point that's valid to us.
He read it in the Footian Times, which still exists. I'm going to assume you don't know what the Footian Times is, like I did.
No.
Did not. So it's a monthly magazine of news, reviews, and research on strange phenomena and experiences, curiosities, prodigies, and portents. You'll need a sense of adventure, curiosity, natural skepticism, and a good sense of humor. Every month, Footian Times takes you on an incredible ride where you'll enjoy learning about the most fantastic phenomena on Earth. I was shocked to find that it still exists in 2022. Hardcover. A printed magazine like that. That's what I think. Like, we work in radio. I may have said this before, but I am, you know, I see the writing on the wall for FM radio, for like linear broadcast radio. But I still, when I go in the supermarket and I still see a rack of magazines of like Take Five and Women's Weekly, those things, I go, I feel like I'm going to have a job until at least they are gone.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the advice on like, you don't have to outrun a bear, but you just got to be faster than the slowest person in your group or whatever that is. In a similar way, you know, we're all in this old media here, and like the internet's coming for us, and we're, you know, we're kicking magazines behind, going like, get them first.
Surely. That's how it goes in the hierarchy. That's what I'm putting my bet on. So break eight, Carl talking about other weird stuff, like the hairy wolf kids. He believes that because they grew up with wolves and they drink out of a saucer, that's why they got hairy. Ricky gets frustrated and tells Carl to tell everyone the manhole cover story. And Carl is rolling. Carl, when we talked about the natural timing and just the innate like sort of comedy in that's within Carl, I think another example of that is when he says, and they never saw the manhole cover again.
100%, because he's so sincere. He's so sincere, and it's so ridiculous because it's like, yeah, because it was on top of a nuclear bomb. Like, yeah, it's disintegrated instantly. But like, as if like that's how, I couldn't fathom how he thought that was a mystery. And he says it as if people are going to be like, wow, that's a real head scratcher. Where did it go?
Break 9, White Van Carl, which is responsible for yet another iconic moment of this show. The first topic is Prince Harry smoking in a polo club. And did you notice, Zach, that Ricky actually gives a fairly sincere answer to this? He says, like, well, look, if you want to make it illegal, but otherwise, if it's legal, leave him alone. And he went, oh, sorry, this is White Van Carl, isn't it?
Yes.
So a moment of sincerity and sort of true opinion from Ricky there. But then we come to the iconic moment, another one from White Van Carl. I'll just play it out in full. Here it is.
Well, according to the sign here, it says scientists are planning to clone mammoths for a theme park. Look at his face. Look at that. He looks like a dog caught in the headlights of a car. He's terrified.
I love Carl.
He's sprung to attention
Carl.
There.
Is that the best news you could have?
Man moths.
Right,
yeah, man Carl, moths.
I love the fact that's why he was so excited that they bred a man moth. What is this? Yeah, it's a human being that hides in your wardrobe and eats an entire jacket in a day. Yeah.
Zach, first time you've heard that bit, that iconic moment. Tell me about it. Where were you? What were you doing? What was your reaction?
I was driving in the car and I almost wet my pants. I found it so funny.
Unrelated to the bit.
That's right, yeah. No, it was... I was already primed because, as we said, the last two breaks, yeah, there was the manhole, there was the cat that didn't look happy. Like, there was already a couple of great moments and I was like, this is a great episode. And then, yeah, I had kind of... It was like multi-layered because I was also filling in a little bit of lore, you know, of like these, the YouTube account kind of thing and stuff like that, the name. But yeah, I just thought it was so funny and it's interesting. Again, as we spoke about, it's the timing, it's such a long pause, it's the delivery, it's so sincere. He's like so confused. He says, man moths. Like, it's like a real questioning of it. Now, I think like a lot of comedic minds would have heard man moth. Right? What most, like, I can imagine someone like Ross Noble going, hang on, did you say man moth? And goes, I thought you said man moth. What would a man moth be? It'd be big wings and a tiny little head.
Bump it into a lamp, it'd be crazy.
Run it, like, you know, gone on a 10-minute run like that. But they both start at the same point where it's like that they've heard something different. But Carl's just like a long pause and a genuine question. Man moth just made me laugh so much. And then also the sincerity of, like, he wasn't like, I knew you meant mammoth. I just heard man moth. He's really like, no, man moth, you know, that's what I thought. That would be better. You know, they do a good job too. I think Steve says, like, what did you picture when we said man moth? And, you know, I think Ricky and Steve do a really good job here of, like, staying in that moment, riffing on it a bit, but then also going back to Carl to ask, you know, for clarifications. It's just really good.
Everyone playing their roles at their...
And you know what it is with...
height of their powers. Steve setting him up, Carl delivering the unintentional hilarity, Ricky responding.
I feel like I've said this before. I don't know if I have. But, like, this is a really good example of it. In this segment, they're, like, archaeologists, and they've drawn out the 1 meter by 1 meter squares in this area. And that's what White Van Carl is. And they're looking in the first square about Harry, nothing there. They're looking in the next square about whatever the next thing was, there's nothing there. And they get to this other one, and they dust off something, and they see, like, a toe bone. You know, when he says man moth, they're like, we've got something here. They're like, everyone come over, get your little picks, get your brushes. We've discovered a dinosaur.
That's
We're
a
digging.
Brilliant way to summarize, because they don't, White Van Carl often doesn't work. They get nothing from him because they don't produce it before the show and sort of gauge his, do a pre-interview. Do you have like a funny hot take to say? So sometimes things fall flat and then sometimes they strike absolute gold. And of the many, many reasons this little segment of the show is funny, I'll just mention a couple more. Would Carl go see it? He says, if it were in the area. He wouldn't travel to go see a mammoth. And then this great moment of producing from Steve when he asked Carl what he thought the man moth looked like.
So it's just for a second, as the words man moth came into your head, how excited were you? I mean, were you both terrified and excited? Just for the moment when you thought that they'd cloned a man and a moth?
I pictured,
what kind of face did he have? Did he have the moth's head, or was it a man's head?
Just a little head, little man head.
Right, what was his face? What did it look like?
He was like, a bit shocked.
Perplexed, yeah. it was like he'd been grafted onto the body of a moth without his consent.
And when he was asleep.
Yeah, he'd woken up.
He just went in for a rather goiter removed, yeah. And they said, we've replaced your goiter with the body of a giant moth.
Yeah.
Is that alright, Mr. Jenkins?
So he had the head of a little boy or a man?
Little man.
Right, okay.
And he's just bumping into a lamp.
He's just bumping into a lamp.
There's nothing not funny about it, you know. There's even down to the visual of a man moth, but even the words together, they're just funny when they come out of your mouth, man moth. It's just funny.
All right, I'm going to take this. I'm going to claim this as a win, another brick in the wall of building your fandom of this show, Zach.
By far my favorite.
We're building up the iconic moments. Wow, that's high praise. We've already had the horse in the house story. So man moth, Zach's favorite bit of the whole show so far.
Yeah.
Break 10. We return again to Steve missing the plane much later in the show. He makes a good observation about Carl that Edinburgh is the first thing he's heard him enjoy. I've already said that part, reading my notes. They set up what would have been, I think, on a regular radio show, a story arc, getting Carl back to his favourite job, because he brings up the paper round again and they say, for £1,000 a week, would you do it? And he says, absolutely. So, if this was certainly a breakfast radio show, they would go, well, look who we've got on the phone now. It would be all pre-prepared. They would have the owner of a news agent going like, oh, g'day, Carl. Yeah, well, if he's game, then I've got a paper round for him to do. So there you go, Carl. Thanks to Liquor Barons, they're sponsoring this. They're going to pay you $1,000, and every day you're going to deliver one paper with a golden ticket in it, and if whoever gets delivered that paper somewhere in London, if they call us during the show, they get $1,000 cash. It would be a whole, thing. What do you call it? A tactic. It would be a whole tactic, a whole story arc.
That's pretty good. Was that off the top of your head, the whole golden ticket?
It was.
Thing? They should do that. The and even the impression of the news agent to say if he's game, I reckon.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Spot on what they say, because you always have these small business owners and you have to ask them to play along, like pretend you've just called up, even though it's like pre-prepared. And yeah, there's always like they're just not quite as good at it, obviously, as the people who do it professionally. And there's always those little, idioms like that.
The final day of Carl doing the paper round, they would do an outside broadcast from the newsagent where they would have a breakfast and have some listeners there, and they would be doing crosses to Carl as he's doing his paper round throughout the morning. And then the big moment would climax. They would time it so it's the highest cuming moment of the show when there's the most listeners. They would have Carl return from his final paper round, and everyone would clap and they'd get his reaction. Then he'd get sacked from the paper round job.
That'd be great. That's a great bit. Even though that's just like typical radio, I would love to see that. Like, I'm thinking of that now.
I'm not being ironic. Like, that's a sincere pitch, and I think it would be awesome. I think it would be really good.
The funny thing about it, though, is you've pointed out how they always time it to be in Australia. It's just after 8. That's the 8 in the morning. That's the big climax of, you know, the peak.
When everyone's getting in the car to go to work.
So what they would do is Carl would be up the road around the corner, and they'd be like, not yet, mate. Like, they'd have to artificially massage
it's showbiz.
To time it so that he came around the corner right at the right. Yeah. But the other part that they do compared to what you're putting forward to show, like, how little investment they have in the show, but also resources, is Steve does a call out. Does anyone have $1,000 to spare? Like, these guys are probably, even now, even after doing one series of The Office, Ricky and Steve are probably richer than the majority of their listeners. But they're going like, yeah, we need someone to splash some cash on this.
Yeah, and then Ricky drives it into the ground even further by torturing Carl by going like, well, because you said yes so quickly, here's a new detail I didn't tell you. Your paper round is the M25. So you're going to have to deliver along a freeway.
See, I didn't... I didn't like that bit because I was like, no, I want to see him happy. I want to see him happy. The funniest thing I can imagine is him delighted riding a push bike, throwing... Like, I don't want to see him tortured in this moment. I want to see him gleeful, having the time of his life.
That's a good observation. Delivering papers. That certainly Idiot Abroad is about torturing Carl and putting him in these situations he doesn't want to be in and getting his reactions to them. It would be so nice to see Carl put in places that he wants to be and see him happy. That picture you painted of him riding a BMX down the road, flinging newspapers, I would love to see that.
Well, see, that's the funny thing with An Idiot Abroad, because that is the top line pitch, is that we're going to torture this guy on this overseas journey. And there is that kind of underlying, I have seen it, I haven't seen the shows, but I've seen it referenced a few times. Apparently in the UK, there's these shows where, like, they send Brits to, like, different places in Europe for holidays, and they, like, don't have a good time. I'm unaware of this kind of structure, right? But like, for me, An Idiot Abroad is actually contrasted by moments where he is having a good time. It's just not what you would expect on an overseas holiday. So it's never the points that you think. He's delighted at a little thing that he finds in a market, like a little toy. Like,
My favorite part, he loves the KFC in Egypt.
Yeah, my favorite part in the whole series, I think I've mentioned before, is when he's got his Walkman on and he's dancing in Machu Picchu when he's doing I Just Can't Get Enough is playing, and he's just like vibing around. That's my favorite part in the whole thing, because he doesn't get enjoyment in the places people expect you to. And so it's that contrast of hating the things that everyone thinks he'll love and then loving the things everyone thinks no one even acknowledges usually.
Yeah, we have to cover Idiot Abroad for maybe the spin-off podcast. That's what we'll do. And it did just make me think of that there is the episode, I think it's Idiot Abroad, where they do send him somewhere he wants to go, which is back to the caravan park that he used to go to when he was growing up, but then it's not as good as he remembers. So there's still just a bit of a down moment.
This reminds me, though, speaking of them with their money and just Carl, I did listen to a radio break during the week that was suggested to me on YouTube. I'm not really sure what show it was on. And I'm generally trying not to engage with Carl stuff in case we want to talk about it on the show. But have you seen where Ricky is a guest on a show and they call Carl and he's tiling his bathroom or something? He's rerouting and he gets really annoyed.
Is he not with Christian O'Connell?
I don't think it is Christian. I didn't pay a heap of attention to it. But Carl gets really annoyed because basically they're saying, why are you tiling? You're too rich for that, basically. He's like, Ricky's explaining, I get paid more an hour than a tiler, so it makes sense for me to pay a tiler and do my other job rather than do the tiling myself. And Carl just like has this real genuine, hilarious rant about how long it takes to get paid in TV. And he's talking about how he keeps hitting up the production company to get paid for An Idiot Abroad. And they keep saying, no, no, no. It's in a bucket. And he's like, well, I can't tell the bank that I can't pay my mortgage because it's in a bucket. And it's just so funny. It's just like
okay,
such
I'll
a...
track that down.
It's such a typical example of like how... It's such a pragmatic view of like show business, like just not understanding the ins and outs, basically. And then he also, you can just hear some underlying, he's like, Ricky and Steve weren't with me overseas, but they put their hand out. Hey, I've got to split this so many ways. They want a bit of a payout. Like he's really annoyed about like how little money he's got from it. And, you know, he's not rich. Everyone thinks he's rich. He's not. He's not a millionaire, he says. It's really funny.
Break 11, the show starts to wind down. We get Carl's misunderstanding of oysters. If you bite into them, they're fatally poisonous, he believes. Which, like, it's stuff like that that makes me, like, accept the other ridiculous things that he says. Which is, like, he genuinely believes, because someone has told him, that if you, because he then clarifies, oh, no, sorry, it's if you eat them and then have some whiskey. Like, he genuinely believes stuff like that. Like, he is naive. He is an idiot. So, you know, like, that's why I think I, in this era, like, forgive some of the because sometimes it drifts into more like darker territory of some of the things. But it's like, man, it's like all for one, one for all. If he's going to believe that oysters are fatally poisonous, if that, then this, you know, he might say some things about Asian people which have not aged well. He then tells us about snails eating the glue off letters in the post, which is what the trail they leave behind is, he believes. But now that we have Google, like so many of these talk topics on this show would have been put to bed so easily if Google were a thing back then, because it took me about 30 seconds to find this answer. Snails constantly produce slime, even when they're not moving. When they do move, they leave a trail of slime that can appear as a silvery track on various surfaces. When they're not moving, the slime serves another important purpose. In addition to helping them move, it helps protect the snail's skin from environmental hazards such as sharp objects, bacteria, and the sun's ultraviolet rays. I don't know who to believe. Is it that, or is it that it's the glue that they've eaten off letters? We'll never know. But since I mentioned the Google thing is what everyone would do now, but since it's 20 years ago, Carl does what everyone did back then. He seeks the backup of a caller. Final, like, bit of natural comedic timing here. If there's a doctor, a postman, call in and back me up.
The funny thing is, too, like, why would a doctor be, you know, I guess doctor was just the default authority in society that you'd usually go to, because it's like a doctor doesn't have an expertise in snails, but either postman.
That's for the oysters thing. That's for the oysters thing. That's the doctor for the oysters thing, a postman for the snails thing.
But shouldn't it be an expert in snails?
The expert, it's letters, therefore postman. Yeah, no, you're right. You've pointed out the flaw in his logic there. And that's the end of the show. There's no goodbye. So I think favourite bit, we know what it is. It's the man moth bit.
Yep.
Iconic moments. I forgot to, key moments in the development of their relationship. I didn't note any down. So I will just say that next week is series 2, episode 2, where we get Carl's story about the parrot blood. We get the origin of the saying, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. The very first iteration of Rockbusters, which is the thing that everyone keeps talking to you about, Zach, saying, I can't wait for Zach to hear Rockbusters. We hear the first version of it, and I'll give a little away now. It does not go well. It is not smooth. It's not particularly enjoyable, but they're finding their feet. They're finding their way with this this new idea that he's got. And we hear about Ricky's involvement in an upcoming charity boxing match, which becomes a bit of an unofficial story arc on the show. You can contact us, CarlyPilkBoysPod@gmail.com. Zach Mander blowing up on TikTok, roasting Joe Rogan. You're going off on TikTok. Congratulations, Zach. You got some exciting deals in the works.
Doing some TikTok videos. Someone actually mentioned that it was similar to something Carl had done. I got a comment on Instagram where Carl he inserts himself into movie characters. I've kind of inserted myself into Joe Rogan, as if I'm being interviewed. Well, not me. As if a kid's being interviewed by Joe Rogan. Those
Zach
are on
Mander.
TikTok if you want to see them, or on Instagram. I'm still yet to get any views in the UK. Those were more American views. So, like, I need to come up with a UK idea.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, wait, you haven't had... No, you've had a comment or so, but was that on Instagram saying, like...
Yeah, that was on Instagram, but I think, like, Joe Rogan is just, like... I mean, I know that Joe Rogan's a popular podcast around the world, but the majority of those people are Americans, because you can see, like, the who's been watching kind of thing. Yeah. So, yeah, it fascinates me that...
The UK's lagging behind.
Yeah, well, you know, that maybe I'm just not a... It's just not a sensibility that is appreciated in the UK, my sensibility.
Well, maybe you can have your school-age character react to things that Adam Buxton says on the Adam Buxton podcast. Or Russell Brand. Russell Brand might be a good one because he's a YouTuber now. He is saying all sorts of wild shit.
I think, funnily enough, I listened to Adam Buxton and I think he was upset recently because someone said that he was like an English version of Joe Rogan. I vaguely remember, maybe not recently, but I was listening to the podcast recently where like someone had done a story on him or something and said that he was like a Joe Rogan like character or something. And he's like, really? Like, but I listened to the, him and, speaking of radio duos in the UK, he and his Joe Cornish do like a Christmas special every year. I started listening to that a few years ago. It's good. They do like,
is that the like only thing they collaborate on now? Is they just do a once a year Christmas special? Like
I believe
a podcast?
So. I believe so. And it just makes you think like, man, they're talented. They do like little songs and stuff like that. I'm like, oh man. I'm like, well, I guess we tell, well, on my radio show, I'm like, we tell mediocre stories. I think that's the best we ever get.
Yeah, so Zach Mander or Tic Tac. Instagram, ZACHMANDER. And on Instagram, you can find the show, Carly.Pilkboys on Instagram. Check out the Patreon. If you're hearing this in the free feed, it means episode 2 is already on Patreon. Patreon.com, $2 a month, Australian, and there's merch on Teespring. It's now just called Spring. You can find the link for that. Get the Horse in the House merch. Click the link in our Instagram, Carly.Pilkboys. Okay, that's it. We'll see you next week. All right. See you, Zach.
See you, Dave.